Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 364. I've got a few pieces for you guys this week in the news. I just wanted to let everybody know that next week I think I'm going to be doing the show live, or bringing parts of a pre-recorded live thing from the Grand Lodge of Illinois. I don't have a whole lot to do, so I'm going to be walking around with my microphone and interviewing some folks, maybe grabbing some interviews with some of my good Masonic friends from around, and I think it should be a pretty fun episode. I also wanted to take a moment here and just mention that illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, who does our Masonic Minute segments every other week, he's actually going to be presenting a couple of topics very soon. So if you're interested, please check it out. You're not going to be disappointed. Steve is going to be doing his presentation on Oak Island and Freemasonry, which is fantastic, at Gateway Lodge number 40 in Creve Coeur, Missouri, on Tuesday, October 16th. And he'll also be doing his presentation on the Craftsman's Journey at Naphtali Lodge number 25 in Wentzville, Missouri, on Thursday, October 18th. Both events are going to have dinner at 6 p.m. with a lodge meeting and a presentation to follow. The locations are both kind of close to St. Louis, so I hope you guys check those out again, October 16th and October 18th, both in that St. Louis, Missouri area, Oak Island at Gateway Lodge number 40, and the Craftsman's Journey at Naphtali number 25 in Wentzville. So please check those out. But other than that, we're just going to go ahead and get this episode kicked off. The Whence Came You podcast is brought to you through the generous support of Masonic Revival, contemporary Masonic designs made for today's Freemason. You don't have to settle for throwing a plain old square and compass on anything anymore. Now you get something truly designed and truly wonderful. Whether it's aprons, awesome pins, and wonderful neckwear, bow ties, ties, pocket squares, you name it, Masonic Revival has it. Head on over to MasonicRevival.com and check out what they have to offer. And make sure if you see Brother Edgar, tell him thanks for helping bring this program to all of you. And this program is also brought to you by all of you, those of you who support this program. We can't do it without you and your donations and all of your assistance, so thank you so much. To find out more about how you can assist this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com and click on Support the Show. There you can make direct donations, sign up to be a monthly contributor, a fellow, or even a producer. And thanks very much to everybody for donating. Now, the first piece I have for you this week comes out of the California Freemason magazine. The article is titled, The Broached Thurnel, that's spelled T-H-U-R-N-E-L. An early Masonic ritual contains a mysterious jewel, and it's by John L. Cooper III, a past Grand Master. Again, this is from the California Freemason magazine, and if you think this piece is really cool, then and you want to print it in your trestle boards or whatever, contact the editor at freemason.org. This is the September-October issue. Fantastic. Go to freemason.org and hover over news, click on California Freemason, and you'll see it right there. One of the nicer Masonic magazines that's out there that's nice and web-optimized, so I'm sure you guys will love it. But without further ado, The Broached Thurnel, Early Masonic Ritual Contains a Mysterious Jewel by John L. Cooper III, Past Grand Master. Within Freemasonry, the term jewel, though it does not connote an item of great material value, commands a special respect. Our Masonic jewels assume a variety of forms. The jewels of a fellow craft Mason include the attentive ear, which receives the sound from the instructive tongue, so that the mysteries of Masonry are safely lodged in the repository of a faithful breast. Within the lecture of the Entered Apprentice degree, the candidate is introduced to the jewel of the lodge. The Grand Lodge of California monitor states, the jewels of a lodge are six, three immovable and three movable. The immovable jewels are the square, the level, and the plum, and they are termed immovable because they are the jewels of the three principal officers of a lodge. The square denotes morality, the level equality, and the plum, the rectitude of life. The movable jewels are the rough ashlar, the perfect ashlar, and the trestle board. The rough ashlar is a stone as taken from the quarry in its rude and natural state. The perfect ashlar is a stone made ready by the hands of the workmen, to be adjusted by the working tools of the fellow craft. The trestle board is for the master workman to draw his designs upon. The definitions above are familiar to most masons and reflect our understanding of these jewels and working tools today. But interestingly, the categories of immovable and movable jewels were originally reversed, and they remain so in Masonic ritual throughout many parts of the world. A casualty of the times. In 1826, New York Masons were blamed for the disappearance and presumed death of William Morgan, a man who had posed as a Mason in an effort to write an exposé on Masonic ritual. Following this incident, dubbed the Morgan Affair, American Grand Lodges sought to defend themselves from other would-be imposters. One strategy was by reversing the categories of the immovable and movable jewels, so that non-Masons would have a more difficult time posing as members based on knowledge gained from reading exposés. The original order is reflected in one of the earliest exposés, Samuel Pritchard's 1730 Masonry Dissected. Question: what are the immovable jewels? Answer: trestle board, rough ashlar, and broached thurnal. Question: what are their uses? Answer: trestle board, for the master to draw his designs upon, rough ashlar for the fellow craft to try their jewels upon, and the broached thurnal for the entered apprentice to learn to work upon. This definition of the rough ashlar is easy enough. It fits nicely with the perfect ashlar in our current ritual, which demonstrates one's growth in Masonic knowledge as well as shaping our lives in accordance with the principles of Freemasonry. The reference to the trestle board, although it is spelled a bit oddly, that is spelled T-R-A-S-E-L, but what is the broached thurnal? Another type of ashlar. By referring to early lodge tracing boards, we find that the broached thurnal is a smooth stone with three equilateral sides and one topped with a pyramid. In the 1730 ritual, this symbol was assigned to the entered apprentice, and the rough ashlar was assigned to the fellow craft. But shouldn't this be reversed? According to the symbolism we follow today, the entered apprentice would begin with a rough ashlar, while the form of a perfect ashlar would be assigned to the more advanced mason. This dichotomy has puzzled Masonic scholars for many years, but I believe that there is an answer, and it is based on how we should perceive these two important symbols. Our current ritual defines the rough ashlar as a stone taken from the quarry in its rude and natural state, presumably by the entered apprentice who is expected to perform a simpler task as being a beginner mason. The perfect ashlar has been, quote-unquote, adjusted by the working tools of the fellow craft, the square, level, and plumb. But our ritual includes an assumption that the entered apprentice mason has a clear understanding of the perfect ashlar he is striving to create. The original ritual does away with this assumption, proposing an interesting direction. If we begin a journey without a set destination, any path will lead us to its end. But perhaps this journey will not merit our time or efforts. Likewise, if as Masons we strive to shape a rough ashlar without a vision of the finished stone, any adjustments will seem like progress, even if they are actually setbacks. It is only by understanding the finished product that we can work to achieve it, rather than wasting time or wasting stone. The beautiful broached thurnal was diagrammed on the master's trestle board so that the entered apprentice would understand his goal. When we work to shape our minds, quote-unquote, as living stones for that house not made with hands eternal in the heavens, we must also follow an example of how to live. It all now makes sense. We changed this symbol in our ritual, and the metaphors of this updated ritual hold meaning for us. But it is interesting to contemplate how our Masonic experiences might have been different had we been given the broached thurnal as an example of a perfect ashlar before beginning our journeys within the craft. I just found that absolutely fascinating. I think it would be pretty interesting to present something like that to our entered apprentices once more as a symbol and maybe give them some of this history. You know, if you're having trouble seeing what it looks like, it's really just a square with a triangle on top. It's like a miniature obelisk. So next up, I have a piece that I really enjoyed from illustrious brother Todd E. Creason, and it's titled, It's Not Them, It's You, Building Masonic Infrastructure, and again by the founder of the Midnight Freemasons. I was asked recently what got me so interested in the topic of Masonic education. There were a few things, but I keep going back to the same experience. And believe it or not, it's one of those few stories I don't think I've told outside of my local lodge. Shortly after I published my first book in 2007, I was invited by a lodge to come and speak about it at their regularly stated meeting. I agreed. The meeting started at 7, and they dined at the lodge at 6:30. The downside was that the lodge was 2 hours away. I had to leave work early to get there by 6:30, and I got turned around and wound up getting there a little later than I planned, about 6:45. But that wasn't a problem, because there wasn't anybody there yet. So I sat in the parking lot and waited. And about the time I was thinking that I'd written down the wrong night, the first car pulled in, a little after 7. Now, when I was told the lodge members dine at the lodge at 6:30, what they meant is that they all go individually to their favorite fast food restaurant, order food, then eat it together at the lodge. I hadn't had anything to eat since about 11:30 that morning, but I sat there and watched them devour their cheeseburgers and tacos. The master didn't think I'd have time to run and get something and eat it before they were done in open lodge. The lodge opened about a half hour late, and we got right into the meeting. They were having a good time, but I'd never been more bored. It was a 90-minute long gossip session. They talked about their inept local school board. They talked about the township not cleaning out the storm drains. They talked about the pastor's wife, sister's son-in-law, with the drinking problem. There was, in that 90-minute discussion, one issue relating to Freemasonry and lodge business that caught my attention. I'll tell you about that in a minute. A little after 9 o'clock, the master glanced at his watch and said, "Oh dear, we've run a bit late. I'm afraid we won't have time for Brother Creason's talk. Maybe he'll come back next month and give it to us. Would you like to at least tell the lodge where they can buy your book before we proceed to close?" I didn't say anything. I did as I was asked and told the members of that lodge where they could buy my book. I didn't mention I hadn't eaten that day. I didn't mention I'd left work early. I didn't mention I'd spend 2 or 3 hours on my presentation. I didn't mention I'd driven 2 hours. I didn't even get mad when the master asked if I'd be willing to donate a copy of my book to the library shelf. It's probably still there. By the time I stopped and got something to eat on my way home, it was nearly midnight when I rolled into my driveway. My drive home still holds a world record for the longest continuous bout of cursing in modern history. As I said, there was one short discussion during that meeting that caught my attention. They were talking about their 2 new Master Masons. These 2 had gone through the degrees together, and after they were raised a few months earlier, they'd only attended 1 or 2 meetings and nobody had seen them since. They weren't even returning calls. Now, don't you find that odd? That's really when things clicked with me. That's when I first became interested in enhancing the member experience, and began thinking about actually doing it in my own lodges. And we have a lot of people in my area interested in this same topic now, and there's a lot of really interesting work being done to this end. The problem so many lodges have is they go about things completely backwards. You've got to start with building your infrastructure. If you want to build your lodge, you have to really take a hard look at your lodge. What do you want to accomplish? What are your goals as a lodge? What would a new member enjoy about your lodge? Why are prospective members interested in joining your lodge? What do they hope to gain, and does that even exist in your lodge? If you want to build and grow your lodge, you have to build it first. You have to be ready for those new members when they arrive. If you don't fix what's wrong with your lodge first, those new members won't still be there by the time you figure that out. But I can tell you, without hesitation, that nobody joins this fraternity to attend a monthly meeting. Nobody. They do join for reasons, and you have to figure out what those are, and find ways to fulfill those needs. Friendship, fellowship, community service, personal growth, knowledge, skills. There are many reasons why men come to us. And, as we've been learning in my part of the world, building this infrastructure not only helps retain new members, but it also engages our longtime members as well. I've seen many go from grumpy past masters to mentors, teachers, and trainers. And some of our biggest critics in the beginning, when we were trying to improve our lodges, well, many of them are our biggest fans now. We've spent a great deal of time finding ways to keep our business meetings short and on point. We have education presentations every single meeting, and we start with those I make notes when I see members of my lodge looking at their watches or glancing at the clocks to see what's going on in the lodge that has bored them. We have great discussions. We have guests come and speak to our lodge from outside groups. We learn things about our community, and we learn things about each other. And we invite other lodges to join us, and very often they do. And these experiments that started in our lodge have spread, and other lodges are doing some interesting things as well. I hope to share a guest post at some point from a member of another lodge near mine that tells the story of his lodge's journey from ordinary to extraordinary. If your lodge is having problems with attracting new members or retaining your old members, it's most likely not them. The best place to start looking is at what you are doing in your lodge. Toddy Creason, 33rd Degree. And I just love that piece. It is a piece that gives us something to do. There's an actionable item in here, and there's actually several. There's a lot of really cool ways that you can go about figuring out these goals and asking these questions. If anybody out there is interested, I certainly can point you in the right direction, maybe give you some tools on how to make decisions and figure out how to make process improvements and things like that. If you're interested, shoot me an email, but basically I'll give you an outline for something called an A3. But in any case, wonderful piece by Brother Toddy Creason. If you like that, then head on over to the Midnight Freemasons, where we publish 3 articles every single week. And speaking of the Midnight Freemasons, I figured it was short enough, and I would just go ahead and I would read the latest piece that I just put up this last Friday. And I was having a conversation, as I'll reference in the piece, a conversation with my friend Spencer Hammond, and he got to talking about how the very problem that I'm going to address in this piece, there's a little bit of a reveal, so I don't want to spoil it, but here we go. It's called The Underplay Committee by Midnight Freemason contributor, managing editor Robert H. Johnson. Your lodge's most important committee you didn't even know you had is the Underplay Committee. Maybe you've even been on this committee and didn't even realize it. Let me paint a quick picture. A petition comes into your lodge. The master assigns the investigation committee. Assuming everything else went the correct and prescribed way, like the man came into the lodge, met the brothers several times, then petitioned with his fees, it's now time for the investigation committee to vet this potential man. This committee is so very important. The committee is charged with investigating the character of a man to determine whether or not he will be a good fit for Freemasonry and his local lodge. Questions the committee will often ask as primers are, do you believe in a supreme power? Do you have any felonies? Does your significant other understand? And are they okay with you joining? Of course, these are good questions to get started. And this, my brothers, is when the investigation committee, much like a caterpillar, transforms into a beautiful butterfly, does the opposite, and devolves. Instead of rising to the occasion and asking the hard questions of a man to see if they meet the standards, we most often do something else. We change into the underplay committee. The candidate will ask, "How much is this?" The committee chuckles and tells the prospective how cheap it is. When the prospective asks about the time commitment, the committee informs the man that he just has to get through the degrees, and after that, it doesn't really matter how much he shows up. It's okay, you don't have to be there. Challenging him to, quote-unquote, put into it what he wants to get out of it. This puts the onus squarely on him. We begin to throw everything of substance out the window, completely underplaying any responsibility or commitments we would ever hold to the prospective member. While I was chatting the other night with a great friend and brother, Right Worshipful Brother Spencer Hammond, we got on this very topic. It dawned on me that this practice is really no different than getting an American Express card, except maybe the Amex folks run a better check on you before you're allowed to get the card than we do when we allow you to join. Think about it. You apply, you pay a yearly fee. The original fee-based Amex is likely more expensive than your dues, by the way. And then you can use the card when you want to. It sits in your wallet, just like your dues card, only used when you feel like employing its aid. Why are we underplaying the commitments of being a Mason? Are we so scared to lose someone that we alter what should be and has historically been the foundation of this organization? Are we so scared that a man has shown interest and that we've invested some significant time in meeting the prospective, that it would be wasted if he were to shy away now? What are we scared of? We have nothing to lose from doing our jobs, brothers. What we have to gain from proper investigation and having standards is everything. And again, that's just a quick piece I wrote after having a conversation with Brother Spencer. I'm sure we have these kind of conversations all the time. You know, after I had this talk with Spence, I sat and I opened up my journal and I just started writing some notes down. I hope you guys do that too. You know, when we're sitting around and we're having some great conversations, when you get back out to your car or doodle the stuff down on a bar napkin or wherever you are, and keep that and try to write your thoughts out. And I think that's a great opportunity to put out an opinion or put out some education. Maybe it's just clues to something you want to look up later in math. Or whatever the case is, but you'll find some inspiration there. I hope you guys take that to heart and you start writing down your thoughts and turn those thoughts into papers or ideas and submit those to your lodge, do talks, and submit them to your lodges of research, whatever the case may be. It's just really important to do that. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal, which we briefly touched on in the beginning of the program. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com. But also, we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skincare. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. We also have a code with On It. You can go to our website, click on More, then go to On It, and you can click through any of the links here, or just go to onit.com and use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off, and they'll send a little bit back to the program to help us out. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruark, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. That's it for this week. I hope you guys all really enjoyed this episode. I will be down in Springfield, Illinois on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this upcoming week for the Illinois Grand Lodge sessions. We've got some great things planned. I know I'll be seen around the vendor tables and having some decaf and all that good stuff. So maybe I'll see you in line at the Starbucks, or maybe I'll see you at the vendor table or wherever. But if you see me, come say hi. I don't have any giveaways this year, unfortunately, but we will be getting our new pins in from Edgar Alejandro very shortly. I think we're going to start running a pre-sale soon. And just a quick shout-out to Brother Edgar one more time, and to tell him get well soon. He got a little sick recently, but he's doing okay, and just wanted to let him know. Brother Edgar, if you're listening, we hope you're feeling a lot better. And that's it. So, with that, we'll talk to you all next week. from Grand Lodge. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.